Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the crisis in American foreign policy, with our Secretary of State calling the President a effing moron, and the Republican Chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee warning that Rex Tillerson, General Mattis, and General Kelly are the, quote, people who help separate our country from chaos. David Rothkopf, a senior fellow at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies and a columnist at the Washington Post and the former editor and publisher of the Foreign Policy magazine, joins us to discuss reports that Trump's top cabinet secretaries have formed a suicide pact in which if one is suddenly fired by an unstable and impetuous president, the others will walk out of the White House, and how Trump has undercut Tillerson publicly to the point where he has no credibility abroad. We'll also look into the consequences of Trump's intention to pull out of the Iran deal next week, which will sow further chaos in U.S. foreign policy and lead to more isolation and self-marginalization of the United States on the world stage. Then we are joined in the studio by Dr. Lance Dodis, who was a clinical professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and is a contributor along with 26 other psychiatrists and mental health experts who have contributed to a new book assessing President Trump, The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump. We'll examine the consequences that Trump is dangerously mentally ill and that he presents a clear and present danger to the United States and the world as long as he has access to the nuclear codes, allowing him to start a nuclear war because of a childish tantrum or some other trigger that could unhinge Trump's frail psyche. Then finally, we will look into the signals by the Republican Congress and the NRA that they will head off any serious moves on calling for gun control following the worst mass shooting in U.S. history by banning so-called bump stocks on semi-automatic assault rifles that allow the weapon to fire bullets at a rate similar to fully automatic machine guns. An expert on the Second Amendment and the history of gun control, Saul Cornell, chair of American history at Fordham University, joins us to discuss whether any real reform will happen after the Las Vegas massacre. And joining us now is David Rothkopf, a senior fellow at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies and a columnist for The Washington Post. He's been a longtime contributor to Foreign Policy magazine and was CEO and editor of the FP Group from 2012 to 2017. And his latest book is The Great Questions of Tomorrow. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Rothkopf.
Good to be back.
Well, thank you, David. And it's an extraordinary moment to have the Secretary of State, or have it revealed that the Secretary of State at a high-level meeting in the tank, the secure room in the Pentagon, totally frustrated with Donald Trump's intransigence over the nuclear deal with Iran, which, of course, Obama did. And Trump has this pathology that makes it compulsive on his part to want to undo everything that Obama did. And apparently in frustration, the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, said to a number of senior officials in the tank that Trump is an effing moron. And apparently NBC News is sticking by that in spite of Trump's claim that it's fake news, because they have a number of sources who have verified that this happened. And on top of that, of course, we have the Republican chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee saying that Rex Tillerson, General Mattis, and General Kelly are, quote, the people who help separate our country from chaos. I mean, this is not just a warning bell. This is like a 10-alarm fire going off, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, it's one of the most striking things about it is the degree to which we accept it as though this were normal or not something to be alarmed by. The President of the United States is not just being called a moron by some critic. He's being called a moron by the senior member of his cabinet. And honestly, anybody who's in Washington, D.C., who deals with cabinet officials or sub-cabinet officials knows that this is not an outlying view. This is the prevailing view. In fact, you might have a discussion about whether the president is intellectually competent to be the president, or you might have a discussion about whether he's emotionally competent to be president. And there's plenty of discussions, as was implied in the statement by Bob Corker that you just referred to. There's plenty of discussions that the president is emotionally unstable, is emotionally unfit to be the president of the United States. And we see it every day. We see it every time he tweets. A reporter gets under his skin. He attacks them. He attacks the First Amendment. A victim of a hurricane gets under his skin. He attacks her. He attacks the victims. He, you know, the head of North Korea gets under his skin. He threatens to destroy the country. Now, you know, words are words, but when you see a pattern like this, you have to worry. You have to say there is something underlying this that is disturbing, and that honestly does have its finger on the controls of America's nuclear arsenal.
Well, that's, I think, ultimately what we should all be focusing on. And there is a mechanism, the 25th Amendment. I'm not sure that the Vice President of the Cabinet would necessarily want to implement it. But do you think that if there was enough of a groundswell and a demand on the part of American citizens, whether they're Republicans and Democrats, because there's no impediment between the nuclear button and Donald Trump's mental state, and that's just the way the system is. So if he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed one day and wants to have a nuclear war, there's nothing to stop him.
There isn't. And, you know, when you talk about Mike Pence and you talk about some of the members of his cabinet, we've seen those cabinet meetings. We've seen them on television. He likes televising these things in much the same way that Kim Jong-un likes televising these things, or potentates in other countries like to, where he sits at a table and one by one he goes around the room and everybody says something flattering to him. Or Mike Pence gets on television and says Trump is a brilliant strategist, or Steve Mnuchin gets on television and says the same thing. He has surrounded himself by sycophants who will not challenge him. And if you have sycophants surrounding you, won't challenge you, the 25th Amendment's a moot discussion because it requires half of the cabinet to, you know, come to the conclusion that the president is unfit for office. But having said that, you know, sometimes we've just got to stop and set aside the politics, turn off the cable news, and say to ourselves, based on what we know as human beings, is this man fit? He's not. And that's very, very dangerous. And everybody has a responsibility to do what they can to rein that in whatever way they can, whether it's changing the nature of the Congress, raising the issue in local forums, raising it with their own political leaders. But the one thing we can't and mustn't do is to normalize this. To say, well, this is just the way it is. There's nothing we can do about it. We've got this quirky guy for the next 3.5 years, because the damage he's going to do in that period of time is incalculable.
But isn't that the problem, in a sense, that Donald Trump has finally landed the ultimate starring role in his own reality TV show, the highest rated TV show, the must-see TV on the global stage as President of the United States? He's not going to give that up, is he?
Well, I think that he's not going to give it up so long as he sees food for his ego in it. He's a narcissist, and he seeks to be satisfied in only one way, and that is flattery, things that he perceives as elevating to him. But there is a possibility, of course, that that's not what this job is going to provide him. And I think while he may decry things as fake news, you can look at the past week, and what have you seen? You've seen a ProPublica story about how Ivanka Trump and Donald Trump Jr. came very, very close to being indicted for fraud. And then at the last minute, the Manhattan DA was paid off by one of Trump's lawyers with a campaign donation, and he dropped the case over the recommendations of his staff. We've seen a situation where, apropos of the Iran deal that you talked about, the Secretary of Defense sat in front of the Congress this week and said, "I think this deal is good. I don't think we should back away from the deal." And so defiance from within there. He you know, seen the Puerto Rico thing blow up in his face. And he may be saying, oh, it's going great, but he knows it's not going great. And it's going to linger out there. Special counsel Robert Mueller is out there, and he is pursuing multiple cases where he's hired people to look into whether the president can preemptively pardon his people, and how do you stop that? How do you look into the financial crimes that are going on? There was a story that broke this week about Paul Manafort, the chairman of the president's campaign, who took the job of campaign chairman for nothing, apparently so that he would be in a position to curry favor with a Russian oligarch who sits at the right hand of Vladimir Putin. Every single day, the noose around Donald Trump tightens. And the real question is, what happens when he thinks that the job is actually damaging to him, that his freedom may be in jeopardy, that his reputation will be in tatters, that his kids may go to jail, that his kids may have to be fired, that, and so on and so forth. And I think when the scale tips in that regard, then it's not the scenario you described, and this may well be a guy who decides it's in his interest to declare victory and walk away.
But in the meantime, of course, he will do more damage. Next week, he'll be apparently decertifying the international nuclear deal with Iran, saying it's not in the national interest of the United States. He's going to kick it back to the Congress. Surely that's going to create total chaos in the international foreign policy arena, isn't it? And further isolate and self-marginalize the United States on the world stage?
Well, first of all, it's very clear it's going to isolate the United States because every other party to that deal thinks the deal is doing fine. Furthermore, the President's Secretary of Defense said the deal is going okay. We know that the Secretary of State probably thinks the deal is going okay. So the President is isolating the United States. He's also isolating himself. But I think that, you know, there are consequences of this that are more disturbing. Take decertifying Iran for no reason for this deal, and combine that with the President's statement about Rex Tillerson last weekend, in which he said, Rex is wasting his time negotiating with the North Koreans. We have other means of dealing with them. Essentially, what he's saying is, we don't believe in negotiations, and when we do deals, you can't take our word for it because we're willing to turn around on it. What does that leave? All that leaves is military action. And what it does is it takes a guy like Kim Jong-un, long viewed as one of the world's craziest and most awful leaders, and it puts him almost in the right if he acts in self-defense. I mean, Donald Trump is the biggest gift that Kim Jong-un has ever received, because he comes very close to making this hideous figure seem like he's the more rational, reasonable actor.
Right, and he gives attention to a pathetic regime operating on the premise of the tyranny of the weak. It gives them attention, which is what they crave. I think in a more serious way, though, he has been the biggest gift to China, a rising power, by self-marginalizing the United States, by getting out of the TPP as his first act. I mean, I think the canary in the coal mine here will be what happens with Australia, America's closest ally. I think there's some serious talk going on in Australia about its commitment to its longest and closest ally in terms of, you know, its trade with China versus whether the United States is a reliable partner anymore.
Every day, every hour of every day, every minute of every hour of every day that Donald Trump has been president, the United States' influence in the world has declined because he's a liar, because he doesn't honor our deals, because he has insulted our allies, because he has cuddled up to our enemies, because he has proven to be erratic, because he has created gridlock in a already dysfunctional U.S. system and has achieved nothing as president of the United States, because he is corrupt and is sending a message to foreign dictators and corrupt governments everywhere, that the United States will no longer be the conscience of the world, that the United States will no longer fight for democracy, that the United States will no longer stand up for certain values. And he supports the Erdogans of the world as they crush the press, and the Putins of the world as they crush the press and democracy. And the result of all of this is we get weaker every moment he's in power. And there's no sign of this turning while he is president of the United States, or frankly, while anybody who's in his close inner circle is in a position of influence. Now, I think Australia and other countries are saying, well, this can't go on forever. You know, the United States will snap back. But I'm not sure whether the U.S. will snap back, because if China steps in and other countries step in and say, no, we're going to lead, we're going to change institutional structures, we're going to play a different role, the United States is no longer reliable, when will you get another Trump? You need a different system. And the old system, by the way, is kind of antiquated and needs an upgrade. I think we could have, by the time Trump leaves office, if he leaves in 3.5 years, or if he leaves, God forbid, in 7 years, you could have a new world order in which the position of the United States is greatly diminished.
Let's turn, as depressing as it all is, there's even more to talk about, I'm afraid. David Rothkopf reports that Trump's top cabinet secretaries have formed a suicide pact in which if one suddenly is fired by this unstable and impetuous president, the others will walk out of the White House. Now, if Tillerson walks, of course, we'll end up with Nikki Haley, who is just as ignorant as Trump is when it comes to foreign policy. And of course, if Trump eventually leaves, we'll end up with Mike Pence, who next week, October the 12th in Manhattan, will be the keynote speaker at the Koch Brothers Network, their latest conclave. So a lot of people have suggested, perhaps cynically, that as chaotic and horrible as Trump is, and this, the having the finger on the nuclear button, he's not getting stuff done, whereas a more competent and just as dangerous person in many ways, Mike Pence, will be more effective.
Well, first of all, he is getting stuff done. He's damaging the United States. He's empowering our enemies. He's doing all the things we talked about. So Donald Trump there is not neutral, right? He's a corrosive figure. Nikki Haley is a terrible choice. John Bolton, who has also been brooded about as a potential Secretary of State, is an even worse choice. Bellicose, irrational, possibly one of the least distinguished, least credible in foreign policy circles, major figure that the national security system has produced in a long time. Pence is no bargain. He does have some experience with the government. He does have, you know, whether it's running the state or in the Congress. But unlike Trump, he actually has an ideology, and his ideology is a dangerous ideology that will damage the lives of countless Americans who choose a lifestyle that he doesn't embrace, or who happen to be women, or happen to be poor, or happen not to be white. None of these are terribly attractive options, but I would caution us to sort of jump to conclusions. It's also possible that, you know, now it's October 2017, that in the course of the next 12, 13 months, that Robert Mueller and a number of other people come up with things that are very damaging to Trump, that the leaks from within the administration about things like the suicide pact grow, and that this damages the Republican Party, as it should, and they lose the Congress in 2018. Well, the scenarios you talked about are very different if there's a democratically controlled Congress, because anybody who would step into Trump's place would be truly constrained. And indeed, if Trump were still in place and there were democratically controlled House of Representatives, the likelihood that he would subsequently be impeached goes up very dramatically.
Well, just in closing, let's touch on the Mueller investigation. This week, the chairs and co-chair of the Senate Select Intelligence Committee did a briefing. They said that the issue of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians was still open. My understanding is that one aspect that Mueller is focusing in on is the possible collusion between the Russians and the data collection that went on through Cambridge Analytica, Mercer's company, of which Steve Bannon's on the board. They did Brexit They did the Republican campaign that elected Trump, with the help, obviously, of the Russians, and also the recent election in Kenya that's now being contested and has been overturned by the Supreme Court in Kenya. So I understand that could be the real smoking gun. In other words, the data mining in social media that was critical to Trump's victory, particularly in those key swing states, was apparently amplified, if you will, by Russian trolls and troll farms and bots. And if that connection is made, what happens? Do the American people realize that they should have a do-over? I mean, I can't see any other way that with all of the other things that happened, with the head of the FBI weighing in at the last minute, etc., the Russians, you name it, there's a whole bunch of factors here. But at the end of the day, don't they all add up to the idea that we don't have a legitimate president?
Well, I think they do add up to the idea that we don't have a legitimate president. I don't think we have a legitimate president. I think that there's enough things that happened that suggest that that's the case. But by the way, I don't think that George W. Bush was a legitimate president either. He lost the election, and it was a politically stacked Supreme Court decision that ended up taking the presidency from Al Gore and giving it to George W. Bush. Our system is broken. It's very important that we stop and recognize the system is broken. Having said that, I don't think that anything Miller is going to produce is going to lead us to have a do-over, except that we're going to have an election in 2020, and we've got a midterm election in 2018. But I would say a couple of things. One, the scenario you described is right, and by the way, the person who was responsible for this targeting within the campaign was Jared Kushner. And I think that, we'll get into, semantics of what is collusion and what is not collusion, but I think we're going to find that the communication between the Russians and the Trump campaign was much more than we even know now, and that whether there was collusion, cooperation, or acting in parallel with a common interest, that we should feel very uncomfortable with this. Leads me to second point, which is the Russians are still out there. They're still doing this. And the Trump administration has not done what is necessary to secure the system for the next round of elections or the next one, because I think, frankly, they like having the Russian thumb on the scale. And so I think we really need to focus also on what could happen in future elections. Finally, I would say, whether there's collusion or there's no collusion, the president of the United States is enriching himself off of the office. His family is enriching themselves off of the office. His daughter and her husband have abused the privilege of their security clearances multiple times in a way that's outrageous, given the attacks that were made on Hillary Clinton about her own emails by abusing their email system. The president, I think, in a number of instances, has influenced policy to serve the interests of his business. Every single day something new comes up. When the wheels lifted off of Puerto Rico, at that moment, the governor said, oh, by the way, the death toll is twice what we thought it was. Now, why didn't he say it before? And who told him? And who said to in the White House? And, why is it that Puerto Rico didn't get waivers that were going to other places? What's Donald Trump's interest there? And so I just think there are an endless number of cases to be made against Donald Trump. I think they will be made and evolve in multiple ways. And ultimately, I think they will bring him down. The question is, how do we protect ourselves against another Trump? How do we protect ourselves against the successors to Trump? And how do we protect ourselves against the abettors of Trump, like the Russians? We need to be looking forward, and we need to be taking those things very seriously, because as you said at the very outset, this is a moment that is fraught with peril for the American system of government and for America's role in the world, not to mention for the lives and well-being of millions of Americans.
Well, David Rothkopf, you've given us a lot to think about and a lot of future discussions, if that's okay with you. And I thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And again, Amy, speaking with David Rothkopf, who's a senior fellow at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies and a columnist at the Washington Post. He's been a longtime contributor to Foreign Policy magazine and was CEO and editor of the Foreign Policy Group from 2012 to 2017. And his latest book is The Great Questions of Tomorrow. We can take a brief station break. We're back, joined in the studio by a former clinical professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, who's a contributor to a new book, The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump.